This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of April 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 2nd of April, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Jan Phillips.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Council spent £19,000 per day on advisers. Don't destroy city's historic gateway. And campaign to keep Main Road open. So maybe now have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki.
Which is Council spent £19,000 per day on advisers. Hampshire County Council is spending millions on management consultants while making savage cuts to frontline services for vulnerable people. The bill for external advisers, such as Deloitte, and Atkins, was £12.8 million between January 2013 and September 2014, an investigation reveals. This works out at about £19,000 per day, including weekends. Yet at the same time, the Conservative-run council is cutting service budgets by as much as 40% and preparing to axe a further 1,200 jobs. Critics point out that if less public money was spent buying in external advice, cuts to social services might not be necessary. As reported in the Chronicle last week, the Council's budget for supporting vulnerable people is being cut by 43%, from £24 million to less than £14 million. Among services facing the axe is a homeless hostel in Winchester, Milford House in Christchurch Road, which provides 20 rooms for people who have moved on from Winchester Night Shelter. Other cuts include slashing £1.5 million from council-funded bus routes, including rural and evening services, with people on low incomes, the young and elderly worst hit. Under government transparency rules, the council is obliged to publish details of spending over £500 and contracts with suppliers. The data shows the council has awarded Deloitte a lucrative contract worth up to £18 million as private sector partner to support transformational change from 2014 to 16. This is defined as root and branch review of how frontline services can be best served, and the council become more businesslike, changes aimed at cutting costs. Deloitte was paid £7.8 million of public money by the council between June 2013 and September 2014, an analysis of the figures show. In addition, council bosses spent at least £5 million over the same period on management consultants from other firms such as Atkins. John O'Connell, director of Pressure Group Taxpayers Alliance, called on the council to explain the bill. He said, "Consultants can occasionally save councils money, but this is quite an extraordinary sum to have racked up in such a short period of time." Councillor Keith House, leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition group on the council, criticised the consultancy bill as lazy spend. He said it's easier to buy an expensive advice than work out how to do it themselves. Hampshire Unison spokesman Andy Straker slammed the bill as a staggering waste of money. The council is aiming to save £96 million in 2015-16 to cope with reduced government funding and increased demand for statutory social care. In a statement, the council defended spending on external advisers, saying it was more efficient and cost-effective than recruiting permanent staff and making posts redundant.
Don't destroy city's historic gateway. Residents have warned planning chiefs that they could destroy a historic gateway to Winchester if new development goes ahead. The City Council wants to redevelop a station approach, the area between the railway station and cattle market on Andover Road, with new offices, housing, shops, enhanced public transport, improved traffic flow and parking. Proposals are at a very early stage, but the scheme would rival in size the £165 million Silver Hill scheme in the city centre. Senior city council officers have suggested the area could become a base for headquarters of national companies. Imogen Dawson of Worthy Lane told the local planning committee on Monday that offices would be out of place near the station. This is an important gateway for visitors and tourists, she said. Creating the commercial hub on one of the few large open spaces on a site of great importance would be inappropriate and unnecessary. There is no need for new offices. There are plenty of empty ones in Andover Road. Her views were echoed by Ashlyn Hanning Lee, also of Worthy Lane, who urged the council to protect the city's heritage. If the council is not careful, this time would be looked at as one of sheer vandalism, she said. Issues were also raised about the architectural merit of office buildings on the car park site. Steve Apachik, head of strategic planning at the City Council, said the results of four consultation meetings with residents held in March need to be taken into account. The meetings were attended by residents and various groups, including the City of Winchester Trust, Winchester Action Against Climate Change, and the newly formed Station Area Neighbourhood Group, SANG. On its website, SANG said that it is concerned about the major impact on residents, loss of surface car parks, traffic congestion and pollution. It also said other developments such as Silver Hill and nearby 2,000-home Barton Farm are not being considered.
And the third headline, campaign to keep Main Road open. Campaigners in North Winchester have launched a last gasp bid to stop the closure of a main road. Almost 350 people have backed a petition to retain Andover Road when a new route is built through Barton Farm, amid fears it will force traffic onto village roads. But developers and transport chiefs have dismissed claims that it could be done without a fresh planning application and further delays to the 2,000 home scheme. Carla Holmes has permission to block off and pedestrianise a stretch of Andover Road near Stony Lane, diverting cars through Barton Farm in a bid to integrate it with the city and kick-start new businesses. Controversy has surrounded the diversion, for years, with residents arguing Hairstock, Littleton and access to central Winchester will become congested. But the campaign organisers, Councillor James Burns and Conservative candidate Paul Twelvetree, say locals couldn't contest details at earlier public meetings. Councillor Burns, chairman of Winchester City Council's Barton Farm Forum, said, "I'm hoping that now this is coming up as a subject in its own right, even though Carla can still turn around and point blank say no, that they will actually say there is a depth of feeling about this in the community and we need to be open to the discussion. We're not proposing they change the location of one of their proposed houses. We're not suggesting they scrap a single metre of the proposed new road through the estate. We support everything they propose, with the exception of closing the existing road." Taxi firm Wessex Cars has joined the protest, which Mr. Twelvetree says is supported by almost 750 locals. Manager Valerie Glenister, who lives in Littleton, told the Hampshire Chronicle that the diversion would add to journey times and fares. But Rob Westwood, Carla's project manager for Barton Farm, said it was all a political campaign, adding that a junction serving both roads could not cope with traffic demands. The firm won planning permission in 2012 after years of legal battles and local protests. Mr. Westwood said there is little appetite to make changes now after work has begun on the site. "We're far too far down the road already," he said. "The whole ethos of the development has been designed around this whole community and linking the existing community to the new one. The developer must file for a stopping up order on Andover Road before the first home is occupied, expected later this year. But Sean Woodward, Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Transport, said they could use an alternative traffic order to close the road. There's no way it's going to change, he said, of the new campaign.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices, then Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum, and then we'll go on to announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements for the 2nd of April. Beeling, Raymond Anthony Beeling at Southampton General Hospital, aged 94. Buckingham, Doris Evelyn Buckingham at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 93. Hicks, Alan Hicks, on the 20th of March, aged 88. Hoare, Hazel Mary Hoare, peacefully at Challoner House, aged 89. Holder, Leslie Lawrence Holder, died peacefully, aged 101. O'Brien, Phyllis Irene O'Brien, peacefully after a long illness, aged 90. Phillips, Nina Phillips, at Abbott's Barton Nursing Home, aged 83. And Webb, Geoffrey John Webb, peacefully at Emsworth, but formerly of Bishop's Waltham, aged 93. And now a Christian comment was submitted by Canon Rowley Ream. Happiness is not unrealistic. When a Facebook posting is viewed over 63 million times, it must be special. And it certainly is. A boy at a high school basketball match in Kentucky, USA, completely caught up, dancing to Pharrell Williams' song Happy as it's played over the stadium speakers. As he dances in a gangway, he's oblivious to the fact that more and more in the crowd start to notice him, so that when the music ends, there's an eruption of applause. The happiness has spread. Christians are in the middle of marking Holy Week. The events of the week are far from happy. They recall Jesus' betrayal, trial, and execution on a cross. However much we want to be dancing, we find we can't. We're plunged instead into a depressing and familiar tale of how good things go wrong and never last long enough. We want to be happy, but too much stands against us. The German Wing's mass murder bemuses us. How could anyone think like that, however ill they were? We shudder at the callousness of an ordinary bloke who somehow thought it right to end the lives of 149 others along with his own. There seems no way of connecting our desire for happiness with where we so often stand, defeated and despairing. But this is just the point Christians contemplate as they look to the cross. There they see Jesus in that very place of disillusionment, asking why his God has forsaken him, why everything he has worked for seems to have come to nothing. Suffering and sorrow lie at the heart of Holy Week, and there are only two reasons for Christians to mark it. The first is to remember that Jesus didn't just share our humanity, but bore the very worst consequences of being human. He became an unhappy victim of injustice and cruelty. The second is to make a surprising connection between this darkness and our desire for happiness. The story beyond the cross continues with an empty tomb and Jesus' followers overtaken by joy. Everything changes as life springs up from death. Christian faith can make this great contribution to the search for happiness. It's the faith that one can look into the darkest corners of the world with utter realism and yet still hope for the light to dawn. The God of resurrection can overturn evil and death and make all things well. And that was by Roland Ream. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And from Robert Barnes. Keep power in elected hands. Sir, the City Council of the Birthplace of England, Chronicle March the 12th, recently achieved the ultimate accolade, joining others fallen from grace such as Rochdale and Rotherham in the Rotten Boroughs column of the Private Eye magazine. Whilst I agree with much that Joanna Lewis and Khalid Aziz say, The real problem lies in the ability of a developer to call in an unelected and unrepresentative inspector who can overrule the democratically elected councillors forming the planning committee. 3 years ago, I was part of the opposition to the unpopular redevelopment of affordable but multiple occupancy houses in Sparkford Road into two student barrack blocks by Abbotswood Properties. Well before the application was considered, you had reported that Abbotswood ring-barked a fine protected beech tree in the grounds. They then refused to have it reinstated because they said the council had not told them previously that it was protected. The council took no action. The planning committee debated this application very thoroughly for 2 hours and decided, against the advice of their officers, to reject the application. I was not impressed by the officers' presentation. If the committee had allowed it, I would have felt sad, but content that they had done a good job. Some months later, we met and followed the planning inspector around the site. His letter deciding to allow the appeal was one of total disregard and disrespect for residents and contempt for council we had elected. Until the law is changed to remove the ability of inspectors to overrule an elected council decision and to downgrade their decision on an appeal as advice only, councils and their officers will never be able to make truly unfettered decisions in the knowledge that they are not fully accountable to their electorate. And that's from Robert Barnes, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
This letter is from Simon Eden, the Chief Executive, Winchester City Council. Wait for full facts before witch hunt. Sir, the letter from John Andrews and others, Chronicle March the 19th, suggested that the City Council's leader said it would be unreasonable for officers to be held to account if the independent review were to find fault in their professional conduct. That has never been the leader of the Council's position. The independent review will consider all aspects of the Silver Hill process, which Ms. Lloyd-Jones believes are relevant. If her review concludes that officers have failed in their professional duty, then the council will need to consider whether further action is necessary. The leader has rightly dismissed the call for heads to roll from a few individuals who have sought to apportion blame before they trouble to ascertain the facts. Whilst your correspondents have jumped to the conclusion that there has been mismanagement of the project, it would seem sensible to await the outcome of that review. That is surely a better approach than the ill-informed witch hunt some seem to prefer.
And letter from Una Stevens. Claire, City Cabinet is floundering. Sir, on March 17th, I was delighted to be a member of the audience to celebrate the achievements of members of our Winchester community who had been selected to receive a Mayor's Award. The leader of our City Council sensitively read citations for those who have been unstintingly given their time to serve family or the wider community. They have remained steadfastly true to what they selflessly wish to achieve, an example for all. The following morning, I attended the City Council Cabinet to review the Silver Hill project. What a totally different scenario. Suffice to say, as events became curiouser and curiouser, I thought I had fallen down a large hole into Alice, into her Wonderland's pool of tears. It became increasingly apparent that the new Cabinet is floundering. How regrettable that the only two members of the former Cabinet, who had so much to offer in establishing a sensible and well-reasoned way forward for the regeneration of this area, have been dropped. The meeting spanned over 2 hours. Speakers' time allocation was inconsistently enforced, so that I expected the white rabbit to arrive at any moment with its fob watch in its paw. One Cabinet member's stance was aggressive at times, and some fatuous questions were asked, while important ones were eschewed. Then came the most shocking spectacle of all, when a former Cabinet member launched a vitriolic diatribe against a fellow councillor. Although he was asked to moderate his language, he was allowed to continue. neither the quality of the chairmanship nor the processes and procedures which were deployed have done anything to foster confidence that this Cabinet can lead the city forward in the way that its outstanding historical legacy and its residents deserve. That letter is from Una Stevens, Parish Councillor, Cliffway, Compton.
And from Chris Murray, clarification on highway works. Sir, following a letter by Councillor Peter Edgar, published in November 13, 2014, relating to the Westgate School redevelopment, I would like to clarify a point regarding the highway works on Chilbelton Avenue. Another correspondent had previously stated that the County Council was going against its own policy in occupying part of the new school accommodation in advance of the completion of the highway lay-by works. At the time, Councillor Edgar's view was that the delay in starting the highway works did not constitute a breach of planning conditions relating to the construction of the new primary school. However, an error was made by the officers in the briefing given to Councillor Edgar. While the school building had not been occupied, the relocation of the nursery had taken place, and although considered a minor breach by planning officers, this was a technical breach of Condition 7 of the planning permission. The previous letter from Councillor Edgar explaining the mitigating factors affecting the start date for that highway works. The County Council accepts, therefore, that the works were not carried out in strict accordance with the wording of the condition, but in considering this to be a relatively minor breach, enforcement action was not deemed to be necessary. We are happy to set the record straight and are pleased to report that the highway works have been successfully completed. And that's from Chris Murray, Head of Strategic Planning, Hampshire County Council.
And this letter is from Michael Carden. Questions still need answering. Sir, I would like to support Mr. Gulsden's letter, Chronicle February the 26th, warning that the Silver Hill judgment does not mean all is now plain sailing or that the outcome might not be a great deal worse. There are a number of issues I don't understand, such as who owns or has paid for the compulsory purchased land and whether the judgment affects the planning approval. These things will become clear and will probably have far-reaching implications. The euphoria of the previous week's letters is understandable, but it should be acknowledged that the City Council acted in what its members believe to be the best interests of Winchester, not for any personal advantage. Expert independent advice was taken. The court disagreed with this advice. The Council must again decide what is in Winchester's best interests. What, for example, is the least expensive way forward? Not for the council, but for all of us who will pay the bills. Moreover, objections have covered a wide range of issues. The content, the density, the bus station, the affordable housing, the architecture, etc. Would it ever be possible to reach agreement on all of these? And if the resulting scheme were not viable, what then? And that's letters from Michael Carden, Edgar Road, Winchester.
And now a letter from Noel McCleary under the heading Plans for Additional Homes Unwelcome. Sir, Kingsworthy has been given and accepted the task of providing 250 new homes in the period until 2031, its contribution to the local plan part two. After extensive consultation with residents, the city and parish councils have come up with an acceptable and widely supported plan. We residents object to any additional housing requirement being imposed by those who have no local mandate to do so. Councillor Ian Tate's plan would dump additional housing on the top of an exposed hill with difficult access, remote from transport links and village facilities, and outside the village envelope. This would not be fair on existing residents, who have used Top Field as a recreational area for many years, nor on the potential residents, who would be totally isolated. Noel McCreary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're moving on to historical items and we're stepping back 100 years. Nikki.
And from 100 years ago, April the 3rd, 1915, headed Quiet Confidence in the Ranks. There has been quite a lull in the operations in the Western Theatre of War during the past week, but quiet confidence reigns in the ranks of the Allies as to the results of the stupendous efforts which are to follow. In the East, the Russians appear to be still gaining advantages, while a feeling almost of despair is being manifested by the Austro-Hungary. In the meantime, the Germans continue their piratical acts on the sea with a callousness which shocks the whole of the civilised world. And a second article. The Times Milford Haven correspondent writes, "The Falabar, one of the largest of the Elder Dempster liners, left Liverpool at 6 o'clock on Saturday evening. About midday on Sunday, when the liner was off the Pembrokeshire coast, a submarine appeared about 300 yards to starboard, flying the German ensign. She made three signals to the Falabar, including the signal to stop. Escape was impossible, and so Captain Davis stopped and prepared to launch his boats. Just as the first boat touched the water, an explosion occurred which blew it to pieces and threw all the passengers into the water. The second and third boats were stove in as they were being lowered."
50 years ago, April the 3rd, 1966. Prices Review, unfair and disgusting. The recent agricultural prices review issued by the government was described as niggardly, unfair, disgusting and disappointing by Hampshire farmers when they packed Winchester Guildhall for a mass protest on Tuesday night. Organised by the Hampshire branch of the National Farmers Union, the purpose of the meeting was to consider the very unsatisfactory price reviews which were unacceptable to most sections of the agricultural industry. And secondly, police are stepping up their hunt for a firebug whom they believe to be responsible for some 18 fires in Dutch barns in the Andover-Winchester area since June last year. Total estimate of the damage nears the £100,000 mark, and the latest fire was in a barn just off the Samnell Stoke Road near Andover late on Saturday night, when the barn and the 150 tonnes of hay and straw it contained, worth over £3,000, was burnt out. On Monday, Andover police appealed to members of the public to report if they saw anyone suspicious in the vicinity of the barn between 9:30 p.m. and 10:10 p.m. on Saturday.
And now two items from 25 years ago, March the 30th, 1990. First, under the heading, "Dropouts Oppose City Police." The City Cross dropouts are opposing Winchester Police's plan to evict them from the shopping precinct. The city has for many years been faced with the problem of people hanging around the historic cross, allegedly causing trouble. Mr. Mark Rickman, a worker at Keystone Hostel, Romsey Road, Winchester, said it would be pointless to tell them to move on. "I can see why police object to rowdiness and drugs. These people should be arrested. But I object to young homeless people being discriminated against. Why should they not be able to stay?" he said. And the second item, "Coordination, careful planning and constant consultation are the key to successful rearrangement of traffic flow and pedestrianisation around the Brooks development site in Winchester." This was the message which came across loud and clear at a meeting chaired by the City Chamber of Commerce last week. The City Council's chief engineer, Mr. David Marklow, had asked to address members trading in and around the Brooks site, together with interested residents and other parties, to consider the planned phasing of work.
Thank you. Back to the present then, and we move on to editorial comment, followed by First Person and Belgarum. Nikki.
And this is editorial comment. Is advice from outside really necessary? Hampshire County Council has spent nearly £13 million over an 18-month period on consultants to help it adapt to the more austere financial future. This bonanza for consultants comes as the council cuts spending on services, including those that help the most vulnerable people. No one questions that reshaping the authority to be fit for purpose in the 21st century is necessary. The council argues that the outside expertise is needed and that it is more efficient than hiring staff. Many people will find this assertion difficult to believe. In a statement, the council said, "Our partnership with Deloitte is bringing valuable commercial acumen to the business of the county council." Setting aside the question of business, having any business in local government, council chief executive Andrew Smith had a salary package in 2012-13 of £234,538, while his deputy, John Coughlin, earned £189,707. This is high remuneration, and the public has the right to expect such people to have the ability to come up with fresh radical ideas themselves rather than enriching Deloitte.
And this is First Person by Joanna Lewis on the London Commuter's Survival Guide. According to Confucius, choose a job you love and you will never work a day in your life. Clearly, he'd never had to commute on southwest trains. As the clocks change, we commuters look forward to travelling home in the light, and it's also the time of year we review the winter period and ask, can I do this for another year? As Hamlet might have soliloquised, to commute or not to commute, that is the question. Whether it is better for the bank balance to suffer or to say we end the aching buttocks and sea of troubles. To be fair, some aspects are improved. Senior rail executives yielded to local pressure and Winchester Station is now staffed until 11 p.m. Using the parking machines in the dark on the Andover side remains unnerving, though, for women. The ticket booth on Platform 2 is often open during the mornings. It makes such a difference having one of the kind-hearted, witty station staff on hand. Also, 5 years on, I've finally perfected my survival strategy, a sort of Bridget Jones meets Bear Grylls, which I willingly share here. 1. Don't use the toilet in the evening. So advanced is my bladder control now, I'm thinking of entering it in the Britain's Got Talent. 2. Don't sit next to anyone eating from a brown paper bag. It's either a pasty or burger and fries. The smell of the first will make you sick. The sight of the second will make you envious. 3. Don't board a Waterloo train between 5 and 7 p.m, 5 minutes before the train leaves. You'll have to stand. 4. If you are standing on the fast train home, hold on to something. Otherwise, if the train suddenly breaks at top speed, you'll be catapulted onto a passenger. Recently, I was lucky not to be sued for assault and a new battery when I got flung onto a man texting. By the time I retrieved both the phone and the man from the front of my blouse, we'd redefined the meaning of 4G and unlimited broadband. 5. Don't be fooled into thinking when you've paid and your app says your parking session has started that it has. It takes 20 minutes to register. I got a penalty from a parking inspector after paying. 6. Expect that roughly a third of people in the quiet carriage won't know they are there. And half of those who do think it's okay to use their phone when the train is stationary or 10 minutes before Waterloo. 7. Avoid the two-seaters in the new carriages if you're over 5 foot. Otherwise, you'll be so cramped you risk deep vein thrombosis by woking. And finally, 8. Try not to wear high heels if you're a woman when using the elevated car park. The rubber surface is like glass in winter and you may end up on the ground and on camera. And definitely don't wear them if you're a man, as you'll also end up on YouTube. You know who you are.
And finally, 3 items from Belgarum's alternative look at the news. And the first comes under the title, Can You Shed Light on MG History? A German motor enthusiast researching the history of his classic car has taken his search across the sea and into Bishop's Waltham. Oliver Rensal has contacted Belgarum in his hunt for a previous owner of his 1936 MG. He believes someone in Bishop's Waltham sold the car, registration JX4101, to David Brown of Gurnard, Isle of Wight, in 1961. Mr. Brown took it to the island on November the 6th of that year. At the time, the car was red, with swept wings, changed upholstery, and a black tonneau and hood. Mr. Rensal believes it was registered in May 1936 in West Yorkshire. He said, "So far, I've identified the owners back to the end of 1961, and I'm in touch with each of them or their surviving dependents. I would like to get in touch with the person who sold the car or his, her surviving dependents, hoping that they can provide some more information about the history of the car, especially if there was another owner between 1936 and 1961. Anyone who can help Mr. Rensal is asked to call +49 40 55 69 33-38. That is +49 40 55 69 33-38, or email oliver.rensal, and that's spelled R-E-N-Z-O-W, at gmx.net. And there's a photograph of JX4101, the classic MG, which is now yellow, and no top up, really beautiful looking vehicle. And another photograph of David's brother Peter Brown with JX4101. There he is, sitting on the front bumper of the sports car. And the second item, from X-rated to wholesome. Pastures new for a controversial student website which has swapped X-rated gossip for the brighter side of life at Winchester University. As reported in the Chronicle, the Winchester Confessions Facebook page has come under fire for allowing students to anonymously share embarrassing and often explicit stories and photos. The university and student union are trying to take the page down, but administrators have moved to highlight the positives of life on campus. Wholesome tales posted in the wake of media coverage celebrate the warmth of staff, a lost wallet handed in, and friendships formed on campus. One user said, "If it wasn't for this uni, I would be doing nothing with my life, and I would have never got out of the rut I was in. Winchy has changed my life. It isn't always easy, but with the mostly amazing people at this uni, it makes things a hell of a lot better." Belgarum welcomes our university's rising star, especially among its students, who are right to appreciate its friendly feel. But those who enjoy risque pictures and tales of debauchery will be pleased to know the page, which boasts more than 3,200 followers, has since reverted to type. And finally, council's signpost mistake is all, quote, in, close quotes, the name. There are small, insignificant spelling mistakes, and then there are total howlers. Jane Austen's House Museum has been in contact with Hampshire County Council to point out that they've spelt the name of one of the world's most famous authors incorrectly on a signpost to her home. The writer opted for, quote, Austin, A-U-S-T-I-N, close quotes, as in the car and the capital of the U.S. state of Texas, rather than the correct, quote, A-U-S-T-E-N, close quotes. They were clearly having an off day, as the spelling of the village of Selborne on the next door sign is also incorrect. Over-endowed with an extra U. You can't help wondering how Mr. Darcy would have felt if someone changed his name to Mr. Arcy. Museum worker Madeline Smith said, "It is one of those names you shouldn't spell wrong." The council has been really helpful and really lovely, she added. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, "We've clearly made a mistake here and thank Madeline Smith for pointing this out. We've made arrangements for the sign to be replaced as soon as possible." And there's a photograph with a large sign pointing towards Basingstoke, Alton, A339, A31, Odiham, B3349 Community Hospital, and underneath, Jane Austin's House, AUSTIN'S. Picture by Madeline Smith.
Thank you. And now we're going to move on to announcements. We start with What's On, and we've got a couple of concerts. Tuesday the 7th of April in Winchester Cathedral, a lunchtime concert at 1 p.m, and that's a free concert with a retiring collection. On Wednesday the 8th of April in Romsey Abbey, there's also a lunchtime concert at 1 p.m. That's also free with a retiring collection for local charities. At the Theatre Royal Winchester, there's The Picture of Dorian Gray on Thursday the 16th and Friday the 17th of April at 7:30 p.m. The box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And at the Mayflower Southampton, Monty Python's Spamalot is playing from Tuesday the 7th of April to Saturday the 11th of April, again at 7:30, but there are matinees on Thursday and Saturday. For details, telephone 02380 711811. That's the Mayflower at Southampton, 02380 711811. Lighting up time ends Friday the 3rd of April at 6:37 a.m. and begins at 7:41 p.m. On Wednesday the 8th of April, it ends at 6:26 a.m. and begins at 7:49 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news from this week's Chronicle.
Search for driver after man attacked. Police are searching for a driver after a man was left needing an operation following a violent road rage incident near Winchester. The victim in his 60s suffered a broken wrist after his car door was repeatedly slammed into him. He was driving from Twyford to Hockley Golf Club when he was overtaken and cut up by a dark-coloured Jaguar. The victim tried to get out of his silver BMW soon after the 52 Reg Jaguar stopped in the road. The Jaguar driver got out and repeatedly slammed the car door into the man's wrist before driving off towards the M3. Detective Constable Paul Harfield said the road was busy at the time and the attack and a queue of cars had built up behind the BMW. "We are appealing for anyone who witnessed what happened to come forward and speak to us. We're also keen to speak to the driver of a lorry who was heading towards Twyford from the M3, who stopped and spoke to the victim. I would urge anyone with information to get in touch as soon as possible. Police want to speak to a white man in his late 40s to early 50s, 5 foot 11 inches, slim build, and wearing a black hat and dark clothing. The victim will need an operation after the attack, which happened between 7:15 a.m. and 7:25 a.m. on Monday. Anyone with any information is asked to contact DC Harfield at Basingstoke Police Station by calling 101 or call Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111, where information can be left anonymously.
Child welfare on agenda. Winchester Guildhall was packed out with more than 300 delegates for a conference which discussed the importance of children's welfare. The Guildhall hosted Home Start Hampshire's Early Years Conference, attended by delegates from local government, police, health and education services and charities. Councillor Eileen Berry, the Mayor of Winchester, also attended alongside Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine and Eastleigh MP Mike Thornton. The Vice President of the charity, Alistair Stewart, was compere for the day, which was aimed at influencing childcare strategy in Hampshire, reinforcing the need for early years intervention and to provide a forum for networking and creating partnerships for the future. Speaker Camilla Batman-Gellidge, pictured, founder of Kids Company, described how the spiral of abuse, be it physical or mental, continues into adulthood if children are not given the support and understanding they need early on in life. Until children can develop an inner safety, she said, they cannot face the outside world. Speaker Dr. Alan Gregoire, chairman of the Maternal Mental Health Alliance, added, mothers' childhood maltreatment has a significant impact on their own children, and I am so pleased that the mental health of new mothers is a key priority for Home Start. Liz Cooper, chairman of Home Start in Hampshire, said the conference had renewed commitment to reinforcing the need to support families with young children and vulnerable pregnant mothers. There was plenty of audience participation, and the conference had a real buzz, she said. There is currently huge pressure on government to prioritise early years intervention, and we hope that our conference will have played a small part in identifying the problems we will face if there is no investment in organisations such as Home Start. And the picture mentioned is of a smiling Camilla Batman-Gellidge wearing her signature multicoloured turban and caftan.
School benefits from Fruit Hedge Scheme. Families from Western Primary School pulled on their wellies for a morning of hedge planting. Fruits of Falflip were inspired by a talk by the Tree Council's John Stokes last autumn, and took on the challenge of finding a home in Full Flood for 70 metres of fruit hedge. In the past, hedges were used as larders of healthy seasonal foods such as apples, berries and nuts, and this planting forms part of the Hedgerow Harvest Project, which seeks to reconnect people to this heritage of free local healthy food. The group aims to highlight the importance and usefulness of hedgerows for biodiversity and landscape character. Fruits of Fulford's Sarah Gooding said, "Western were delighted to be offered the hedging, which includes hawthorn, elder, roses and wild plums, which will not only provide interest throughout the year, but also be beneficial for wildlife." Year 5 pupils very enthusiastically joined us in planting the last few whips last week. The Tree Council will be back next year with ideas for how the community can make the most of the harvest. And there's a photograph of the families who joined in the planting of the fruit hedges in Full Flood, all suitably attired in their wet and cold weather gear, with spades and forks, ready to dig the necessary trenches to put the hedging in.
Is this the strangest annual tradition? Perhaps Hampshire's strangest annual tradition was carried out last week. The Titchbourne Dole was handed out to local villagers near Alsford. It dates back to the Middle Ages, when Lady Mabella Titchman, on her deathbed, instructed that a donation of farm produce be made to the poor each year. Rather heartlessly, her husband promised to supply them with the produce from as much of the estate as she could walk around, carrying a lighted torch. His crippled wife dragged her way round a field of 23 acres, to this day still known as the Crawls. With her dying breath, she prophesied that the house of Titchman would be cursed if the dole ever lapsed. So every Lady Day, a gallon of flour is handed to every adult and half a gallon to every child in the villages of Cheriton, Titchman or North End, from the steps of Titchman House. And there's a very nice photograph of Father Paul Townsend blessing the flour. This is on the front porch, wrong word, really, huge columned entrance of Titchman Park. And another one of Lex Harris doling out the flour to four-year-old Jemima Murfitt and Mum Ginny.
Siblings meet the man saved by their uncle during war. Veteran shares story of how his friend protected him from mortar. A family with roots in Winchester have discovered more about how their uncle was killed in the Second World War after reading about him in the Hampshire Chronicle. Brother and sister Jeff Bentley and Janet Hilliam found an online chronicle story which referred to their uncle Leonard Burgess from Sutton Scotney, which led them to meet the man he saved while fighting in Italy. They read about Reg Argyle's 90th birthday when he returned to his birthplace in St Thomas Street in October 2013, only to discover Mr Argyle paying tribute to his, quote, best pal, Mr Burgess. Now the families have met and spent several hours sharing stories about Mr Burgess, known as Len, at lunch in the Swan Hotel, Alton. Mr Argyle regaled Mr Bentley, Mrs Hilliam and her husband Mel with wartime stories about Len and shed some light on a long-standing family secret. On September the 14th, 1944, Hampshire soldiers made an assault on Monte Scuto, defended by the Germans. They put up desperate resistance, causing 1,276 British casualties in just a few days. Amid the fierce fighting, there was a mortar attack. Mr Argyle threw himself into a shell hole before realising that Mr Burgess had jumped in after him and subsequently had taken the full impact of the exploding mortar. He died in hospital a few days later. "We knew nothing about the circumstances of Leonard's death," said Mr Bentley of Chelmsford. "We knew nothing about Reg, and it's only because the article mentioned Leonard and said he inadvertently saved his life. It was the first we'd heard about any of it. We got the letter from the War Office saying he died of wounds, but my nan and grandad never talked about Leonard," he added. "My mum did. She thought the world of him. They wrote to each other when he was away. We actually took her to Grandara, to his grave in Italy, when she was 70. Mr Burgess was the eldest of 9 children who grew up at the family home in Wanston Close in Sutton Scotney. He was paid a special tribute by Mr Argyle at a ceremony last year held at Searle's House in Winchester when 10,000 crosses were laid for Hampshire men lost at war. Mr Argyle said, 'Sunday went quite well. I was amazed, truly. They gave me photos of Len, including a school photo, which brought back memories.' Mr Bentley added, 'Reg is a gentleman. He couldn't have been nicer, and he kept thanking us for going to see him. He's got photos of Leonard's grave on his mantelpiece, so he obviously thinks the world of him.' And there's a lovely picture here of Reg Argyle with a resplendent moustache, flanked by Janet Hilliam and Jeff Bentley.
Carter canters to national title. Squash. Winchester squash starlet Jared Carter has won the English Junior Closed Under 15 Squash Championships without dropping a single game. Despite still only being 13 years of age, he dominated his 15s age group in the recent national tournament at the Edgbaston Priory Club in Birmingham, with a perfect record in the 5 matches he played. Carter, whose picture appears in this article, is supported by the Hampshire Talented Athlete Scheme. He was England under 13 champion 2 years ago, but was knocked out in the semi-final stage last year. He made no mistake in Birmingham, though, powering to straight set wins over Hayden Smith, Essex, Oscar Koo, Middlesex, Yorkshire's Henry Anderson, and West Country star Jake Newey, who was the only player in the tournament to take him to a tiebreak. In the final, Carter confidently brushed aside number two seed Lancashire's Oscar Beach, 11-7, 11-4 and 11-4, to become under 15 champion, the match being done and dusted in just 26 minutes. Carter now has the tag of English, Swiss and Dutch junior champion on his hugely impressive CV, and is fast emulating the past feats of his Hampshire stablemates, Kyle Finch and Robbie Keefe. He is also a multiple winner of national championships, winning under 13 English and British titles, and was a member of the England's Five Nations Grand Slam winning team and the Wycliffe School National Schools Championship, winning under 15 and under 19 teams in March this year. And that photograph shows the young man with his squash racket, and jolly good luck to him.
Home from home, B&B is success. A Winchester bed and breakfast, which was opened in January by a 25-year-old local woman, has been hailed a success. Hannah McIntyre spent 2 years refurbishing her property in Parchment Street, gifted by her father, into a boutique three-bed B&B, in a bid to give her visitors a home from home. So far, Hannah's, which boasts handcrafted furnishings and luxurious mezzanine bathrooms, has received 32 five-star reviews on TripAdvisor and received high praise from a number of national magazines. At her official launch last Tuesday, attended by local businessmen and women, Miss McIntyre said, "I'm loving having so many people here at one time, although I'm a little nervous and really excited. Everything's worked out really well since getting started. We've not had a single bad review, touch wood. It's so nice to have such a good turnout from local people who I haven't even formally met yet." She was supported by her mum, Jane, who has an interior design shop in Southgate Street, with a lot of the decoration, although Hannah was largely responsible for a lot of the quirky designs. The three double bedrooms, which have ensuite bathrooms with unique touches, including copper piped showers and sliding cottage style doors, sit aloft a large and open reception room, complete with grand piano. Black Boy owner David Nicholson praised Miss McIntyre's ingenuity. "I think it's stunning, absolutely stunning," he said. "It shows imagination, interest, and it's simply stunning." And there's a lovely photograph of Hannah McIntyre. She's a very slim and pretty girl with a beautiful smile and long, honey blonde hair, and I think she will have a greater success with this business.
Playground revamps hit by lack of funds. Plans to revamp playgrounds across Winchester could be halted if the near £340,000 funding shortfall cannot be met, a meeting heard. The City Council's Cabinet discussed the new five-year plan, which would see nine play areas refurbished, costing almost £500,000. It was put forward at the Town Forum last month. Councillor Patricia Stannard, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing, said 4 of the 5 years in the plan cannot be committed until funding has been received. The first year, 2015-16, will see makeovers at Stanmore Recreation Ground, £16,000, Summers Close Skate Park in Stanmore, £80,000, an indoor gym in Stanmore, £20,000, and North Walls Bowling Green, £20,000. The Cabinet heard that whilst there is enough funding for those refurbishments, there is currently a £336,000 shortfall for play areas at North Walls, Winner Manor Road, Marnhull Rise, Gordon Avenue and Tegdown Meads. It means they may not be revamped as planned between 2016 and 2020. Councillor Stannard asked if the town forum could consider increasing council tax by 1.9% to cover it, but corporate director Steve Tilbury said that was not possible. He said the forum is between a rock and a hard place because it cannot control its precept independently of the council. He added that an increase in council tax would have to be across the whole district, which he said would be unfair, given that it would be to support a city centre-specific scheme. Mr. Tilbury also explained that due to cutbacks from central government, there's less funding available for such projects. Councillor Stannard said, "I'm very concerned that it has got to this stage before coming before Cabinet, because you're talking about a significant shortfall." She suggested that the town forum reports to Cabinet in 6 months' time, detailing plans to secure funding. The Cabinet unanimously agreed, as well as approving the £120,000 for the 2015 to 2016 refurbishments.
Crackdown on thefts. Police are asking for help from Hampshire Railway passengers to crack down on pickpockets, gadget grabbers and luggage thieves. British Transport Police officers have launched Operation Magnum to disrupt and deter pickpockets preying on commuters and tourists at busy stations. The force is also asking for passengers to help prevent thieves stealing smartphones, luggage and valuables. Superintendent Jason Bunyard said, "While crime on the rail network is down for the 10th successive year, theft of passenger property is an issue, particularly as a lot of the travelling public now carry high-tech devices. Officers use a range of tactics to create a difficult environment for criminals, including intelligence-led patrols by uniformed officers and a plainclothes theft squad."
Apprentices in the market for charity. Apprentices from Winchester City Council raised more than £500 for charity at a Winchester car boot sale. The four, Chandler Divers, Nina Harper, Matt Scott and James Roberts, collected money at the event held every week in the Cattle Market car park. They raised £540, which they will use to buy and donate food and clothing to Winchester Basics Bank. The council apprentices are entrants in the Brathay Apprentice Challenge 2015, which is the official search to find the National Apprentice Team of the Year. They hope to be recognised for their efforts in supporting the community and raise awareness of apprenticeships. And there's a very nice photograph of the four of them holding up, I presume, their sign, which they use to ask for the money.
Warning signs of fatal clot, quote, not given, unquote. A Chandler's Ford man who developed a fatal blood clot after breaking his ankle was not told of early warning signs, his widow has claimed. Doctors initially failed to tell Kevin Kilford of Morley Gardens to report back if he developed key symptoms, his wife Karen told an inquest. A coroner ruled it was, quote, unclear, unquote, what advice was given, but said doctors at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital acted appropriately when they withheld anti-clot medicine. The inquest heard how Mr. Kilford slipped on leaves and fell down a ditch on his way home from the Hiltonbury Farmhouse pub on the evening of December the 6th. The 52-year-old crawled up the bank and made it home, thinking he had sprained his ankle. He was put in a cast the next day after x-rays revealed it was broken. Mr. Kilford's injury began to heal over the next 3 weeks, but he complained of a cough and shortness of breath. The inquest heard how a cold could have, quote, masked, unquote, growing breathlessness caused by a clot which had travelled to the main blood vessel to the lungs. His condition declined and he was rushed to Southampton General Hospital, dying on the morning of December the 27th. Mrs. Kilford contested nurses' records from her husband's first casualty visit on December the 7th, which said he was warned to look out for calf pain and shortness of breath as signs of clotting. Andrew Foggett, orthopaedic surgeon at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, said he was not given medicine because he did not meet national risk assessment guidelines. He added that Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust had reviewed its policy on issuing the medicine, but agreed that no changes were needed. Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short accepted this, saying it was, quote, appropriate in these circumstances to withhold anticoagulation tablets. He added that there was, quote, no guarantee, unquote, that the treatment would have prevented death. Recording a verdict of accidental death, he said, it is unclear as to what advice precisely he was given.
Flexible solutions. Yavington's studio. An Itchen Valley woman has discovered she's able to help people with severe illnesses by helping them with their posture and flexibility. Jane Watson opened Yavington Studio at Avington in September to help people develop a better awareness of their movement and breathing, which can help reduce stress. The 50-year-old said she was surprised to find some clients claimed the method developed by Ukrainian-born Moshe Feldenkrais had also helped them during their rehabilitation from leukemia, strokes, and even bereavement. The method is already well known for helping cerebral palsy and multiple sclerosis, but Mrs. Watson admitted she hadn't expected to be helping people along the road to recovery from cancer. Mrs. Watson, a married mother of three, said the treatment is about how releasing physically can help release emotionally and how by being aware physically one can release stress. It calms the mind and it calms the body, she said. We don't know enough about how the brain recovers and repairs, and we're just trying to understand it. I'm very interested in the research between mind and body and wanted to look at that more by seeing more people and looking at the effects of the work. I sometimes have people who say, the doctor wants to break my foot, but I don't want them to. Can you help with the pain? It's about the plasticity of the pain. Mrs. Watson, who worked in acting and directing before qualifying in 1999, has clients from as far as Poole, Newbury, and even London coming to her classes, which she runs 3 times a week in addition to her one-to-one clients. To kick off her new term of classes, which start on April the 20th, she's hosting a voice and song event with voice coach Amanda Smallbone on April the 18th. She's also hosting a yoga day with instructor Fazila Benoit on April 25th, which will be a mixture of meditation and Feldenkrais. Creativity and awareness can help people with the quality of their life, Mrs. Watson said. It's really important people have the tools to take this into their everyday lives, like at Sainsbury's, for example. These classes will help people to express themselves. And there's the photograph of Jane Watson posing for the camera and another of her teaching Tara Russell some techniques at her studio in Avington.
All grants aid essential work. Winchester Cathedral is a large step closer to raising its £3 million target for essential works after two big grants from local and national government. The government's World War I Cathedral Repairs Fund has awarded £500,000 and Hampshire County Council has gifted £200,000 for the Learning Centre, leaving the cathedral with a target of £2.5 million. Dame Mary Fagan, chairman of Winchester Cathedral Trust, said, "This is absolutely wonderful news. We are so grateful to everyone who has helped us get this far. The Heritage Lottery Fund, Hampshire County Council, the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, and all the many trusts and individuals who have been so generous with their support. We are now able to complete the refurbishment and extension of the Learning Centre and continue with renewed confidence with all the conservation and repair work to the cathedral, which is so desperately needed. The news comes just a week after the cathedral received nationwide coverage when 27 tonnes of scaffolding were erected for works to the leaking roof. Annabel Boys, Receiver General and Canon Treasurer, is delighted at the successful outcome of its application to the World War I Fund. Sorry, it might be WW1 Fund, anyway, for which the Dean and Chapter applied in January this year. This grant means that we are now in a position to make a start on replacing some of the 1935 wiring and lighting circuits in the Lady Chapel and the South Transept, she said.
Lambing season put a new light by genetics and higher prices. For the traditional sheep flock, this is the heart of the lambing season. The ewes are put out to tup on October the 20th and lambing starts on March the 15th. That puts us over halfway through the four-week event. There have been huge advances in genetics in recent years, but there's been comparatively little genetic improvement of sheep compared to pigs, for example. True, rams of different breeds have been used on the lowland ewes, usually mules, a cross between the blue-faced Leicester ram and a Scottish blackface or Swaledale ewe. The Suffolk or Hampshire Down were widely used as rams in the past, but today the Texel is the most popular. The Texel breed originated on the small island off the coast of Holland and has a long, level back with extra muscling, particularly on its hindquarters, not dissimilar to the double muscling on the back end of continental cattle breeds, such as the Charolais. The quality of the ram is important. It provides half the genes, after all, and most farmers will buy the best they can afford, paying perhaps £300 to £400. But whilst sheep farmers try to improve their stock by selective breeding, the latest genetic techniques are only now starting to be exploited. The coverage of a ram sale on a recent BBC Countryfile programme was startling. Vicious Sid, a 100-kilogram, 8-month-old Texan ram, was sold at auction at Lanark Market in Scotland last August for 145,000 guineas, the equivalent of £152,250. Even that is not a national record. Another Texel ram, Deveron Vale Perfection, made 220,000 guineas, also at Lanark, in August 2009. How can a ram possibly be worth that much? It certainly came as a surprise to its owner, Robert Cockburn, a shepherd, who keeps his own flock of 25 Texels in his spare time. Vicious Sid was bought by another sheep breeder, Alan Blackwood, and two colleagues from Ayrshire. They will collect his semen to sell and use themselves for artificial insemination. Sales will bring in £100 per straw, which starts to bring a healthy return. But it is by embryo transfer that the benefits can really be gained. The best stock ewes are artificially inseminated with Vicious Sid semen, and once fertilised, the eggs are stripped from them. These embryos are then implanted into numerous surrogate mothers for the rest of the gestation period. By this means, very large numbers of Vicious Sid's progeny can be born in a very short period of time. And just in case of accident or unforeseen disaster, huge quantities of his semen will be frozen for future use. The consumer will judge, by the taste of his offspring, whether Vicious Sid was worth his price.
Cake sale nets £4,000 for wounded heroes. Winchester residents raised over £4,000 this year for a charity which helps wounded soldiers. Help for Heroes saw £4,085 donated following their bake sale. Coordinator Sarah Ferguson said, "The High Street was not as busy as last year, but we still raised a wonderful amount of £4,085. This will provide vital support for injured, wounded and sick service personnel. A huge thank you goes to all those who baked, without whom we would not have a sale." There are also many cafes in Alresford and Winchester who donated cakes and businesses who donated raffle prizes. Hopefully everyone enjoyed their purchases and that they come back for more next year.
Tributes to former student. Tributes have poured in for a Winchester University, quote, legend, whose cancer battle inspired her to raise thousands of pounds for charity. Graduate Sadie Rance passed away last week after an 18-month fight with ovarian cancer, her husband has confirmed. The 23-year-old from Bromley, Kent, was a former student union officer and popular member of the university netball team. Sadie and her husband, Jason, raised more than £35,000 for the gynaecological unit at Royal Marsden Hospital after being told she had 12 months to live. News of her death has sparked a fresh donation surge to another chosen charity, Teens Unite Fighting Cancer. More than £200 was given online between Tuesday morning and the time of writing. Sadie also made national headlines earlier this year when it was reported she used the internet to diagnose her condition. Students and alumni flooded social media last week with memories of her time in Winchester. Friends said she was a keen volunteer who was always looking to help the student union. In a statement on its Facebook page, the union said it was hugely sad to hear of the passing of graduated student Sadie Rance. The union added, as a previous welfare officer and member of netball, Sadie was a Winchester legend.
New arrivals at Marwell. Visitors to Winchester Zoo will be in for a treat this Easter with the arrival of three new meerkat pups. Born to Macbeth and Choggy, the triplets are the newest arrivals for Marwell. As they turn a few weeks, they have to begin to dig out their burrows to explore their new surroundings. Over the next few weeks, as their confidence grows, they will spend more and more time outside learning the ropes from their parents. Mark Fox, team leader for carnivores, said, "All three pups are doing really well. They're eating well and finding their feet quickly, thanks to their older siblings. Mum and Dad are experienced parents and are remaining calm but protective." The new arrivals have three siblings, Jasper, Bella and Rosalie, who were born in July last year and will take on the babysitting role with their parents as they teach them to play and forage. Guests can find the new brood of meerkats on the back lawn enclosure behind Marwell Hall. And the meerkats aren't the only thing to pop up this Easter. 5-year-old Varus, a new male fosser, has arrived from Parken Zoo in Sweden as part of the European Endangered Species Breeding Programme. They are Madagascar's largest carnivore, classified as vulnerable on the International Union for Conservation of Nature Red List of Threatened Species. And it is thought that there are fewer than 2,500 of them on the island. And there are two pictures here, one darling one of the three meerkats, cuddled up against their mother, and of the new fosser.
Catwalks come back for the city's fashion week. Catwalks come back for the city's fashion week. Winchester is sure to become alive with colour when the annual fashion show comes to town. Now in its fifth year, Winchester Fashion Week will turn the high street into the catwalks of Paris, London and Milan from April 21st to the 25th. To celebrate its return, organisers are giving everyone who buys a ticket a chance to win a trip to the Italian fashion capital. Hampshire Life, Hotel du Vin, the Independent Holiday Shop have stepped forward to help with the organisation of the event run by Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, and sponsored by the University of Winchester. Catherine Turness, BID manager, said, "Winchester boasts a diverse offering of retailers with an exciting mix of small independents and large chain stores. It's fantastic to see these businesses showcased throughout the week, dedicated to fashion, beauty, lifestyle and creativity in our wonderful city. Winchester Fashion Week also provides us with the opportunity to engage with students from both the University of Winchester and Winchester School of Art and nurture the creative talent we have developing right here in the city. The city will see 5 days of workshops, lectures, style advice, sessions and shopping experiences, culminating in a glamorous catwalk show at the Guildhall on Saturday, April 25th. It will contain a cross-section of independent and national brands, including LK Bennett, Phase 8, Jigsaw and Jeremy France Jewellers. To find out more or buy tickets, visit winchesterfashionweek.co.uk. And there's a photograph of the Winchester Fashion Week catwalk show in 2013 with a glamorous model strutting the stage in front of a very interested audience.
Meeting planned over future of post office. Upham residents are planning a public meeting to save their last village shop. Lower Upham Stores and Post Office faces closure, but parish chiefs hope residents will resolve to run it themselves at a summit this month. As reported in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, owner Gary Datt says roadworks have forced him out of business by restricting parking. Parish clerk Anne Collins said the public meeting, penciled for April the 20th, will give the residents the opportunity to see what they'd like to do, whether they'd like to like a community shop. She added, "There might be nobody that wants to run it. We don't know. We're hoping that somebody might come forward." Many elderly and immobile residents will face long journeys to collect pensions and groceries if it closes on May the 17th as planned. Winchester City Council is currently deciding whether to list the shop as a community asset, which would give locals 6 months to prepare a takeover bid. A decision which will rule on the building's benefit to the village is due by April 30th. Current community assets nearby include Bishop Waltham's Youth Hall and NHS Physiotherapy Clinic. Upham Parish Council is also planning to nominate the Village Hall, Recreation Ground, Upham Pond and 3 pubs, including the Brushmaker's Arms.
Newsreader breaks down hospice wall. Young people with life-limiting conditions will get double the services and support after 2 hospices link their buildings. Naomi House Children's Hospice and Jack Space for Young Adults have been joined by a new bridge, allowing staff, youngsters and equipment to move between the 2 buildings in all weathers. The walkway is part of the £4 million Caterpillar appeal and refurbishment project to extend Naomi House in Sutton Scotney by September. Charity patron ITV newsreader Alistair Stewart helped smash down the last section of wall, separating the hospices. And there's a picture of Alistair Stewart, axe in hand, chopping the wall down, viewed by Naomi House staff.
Victory for residents in brewery battle. A brewery has withdrawn plans to build state-of-the-art premises on the outskirts of Bishop's Waltham following talks with villagers. Upham Brewery had submitted a proposal for a new building off Ashton Lane to allow it to increase production 5-fold. The move would have seen their output increase to 60,000 casks a year. The brewery is currently located in Cross Lane between Ashton and Lower Upham. But following 2 public consultations and ongoing discussions with nearby residents, the firm has withdrawn its application and gone back to the drawing board. The firm said it needed to stay in the vicinity to access local water and will work closely with the parish council to identify other sites. Brewery director David Butcher said, "We'd like to review everything else and look at other options that sit better with the local community, considering the amount of objections to the site that we've proposed. We want to see if there's any other alternative and engage with the parish council and others to see if we can find somewhere else. Over the next 3 months, we would like to carry out that whole process again. We need to be more openly demonstrating what we're trying to do. Since it was founded in 2009, The brewery has seen a rapid rise in demand for its products. Following a public consultation in Bishop's Waltham, residents formed an action group to stop the brewery from building on a greenfield site. Action group member Libby Cleaver said, "I'm not at all surprised to hear they have withdrawn. We are just an ordinary group of people, and we were quite concerned about it. But we are so happy that it worked out, and there is a chance that our example could be followed elsewhere. It's not Upham Brewery that we object to, it's simply their choice of site, and Upham Brewery will, I'm sure, always be well respected in this locality. They're a great firm which is going places, and we would like to always give them support." Colin Palmer of Ashton Close said, "It's a triumph for ordinary people expressing their concerns over the effects not only on Bishop Waltham, but also the South Downs National Park." And there's a photograph of the action group who showed their opposition to those plans to expand the Upham Brewery, all looking very determined and pleased with the result.
Prize for untangling bust of Medusa. A St Swithin schoolgirl has won a regional prize for her understanding of a 17th century sculpture. Emily Faibouche showed off her knowledge of Gian Lorenzo Bernin's Bust of Medusa in a competition designed to boost art students' public speaking and engagement in art. The 16-year-old from Farnham beat local competition, including pupils from Winchester College, Godolphin and Canford. The Articulation public speaking contest invited sixth form students to present an artwork, artefact or architecture of their choice, testing their thinking, observation, research and presentation skills. Emily progressed to the final at Cambridge University, judged by Dr. Penelope Curtis, director of Tate Britain, but failed to make the top three. She said, "I had a fantastic day at the New Art Centre for the regional heat and at Cambridge for the final. The experience was extremely valuable and inspiring. I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to be involved." And there's a photograph of a beaming Emily and also of the statue of Medusa with the head of the curling snakes. How you sculpt anything like that or talk about it. She obviously did very well.
Plans for Monster Care Home approved. Winchester Civic Chiefs have approved plans for a large care home in Twyford, despite parish councillors' fears over increased traffic. Opponents describe the building as, quote, a monster. City councillors approved the 131-bed care home at Humphrey Farm, Hazley Road, along with a children's nursery, offices, storage and ancillary food distribution centre. The care home will be up to 13.3 metres high, with room for 165 parking spaces across the site, which will replace the existing mill. The original outline planning application that was approved in 2010 was not the same application now before them, said Twyford Parish Councillor Chris Corocoran. "This is not the scheme you approved," he said. "The design is hideous. Surely the national park deserves this extra care. Once this is put up, people will ask, how on earth was this monster allowed? Permanent harm would be caused to the national park and to its landscape." Coden Common and Twyford Ward councillor Daryl Henry said she was worried about its impact on the village. "The proposed development should meet local needs," she said. "Does this conform with the policy?" "No." Officers have already admitted this morning that the increased use is not the same as the outline application. It will cause increased traffic in an infrastructure that already struggles to cope. Councillors also cited issue with the design, despite officers having already gone back to the applicant, Jonathan Humphrey, asking for amendments. Councillor Barry Lipscomb said, "I still feel that the design is angular. To me, it's not a country design. I know it's a functional building, but I would expect to see this as an urban site." Officer David Rotherley said, "It's modern, it's contemporary. We have gone out to various negotiations and requested various changes to basically conclude that this is an acceptable design and height for this location." I understand what Councillor Lipscomb is saying. It is different, but we're comfortable that this is a well-ordered design. It's not as angular as it appears. Chairman Lawrence Ruffle added, "This building is a lot prettier than what it's replaced." Mr. Humphrey said, "It's clear that the council has already spent time and energy in making the scheme a success." Councillor David McLean added, "We have a rising elderly population that needs to be catered for. This application will do that. We have a need for more jobs. This application will do that."
That concludes the extracts for this week, so thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Jan Phillips.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week and a good Easter. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.